Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors with these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now, the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like. Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, Click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Okay, time for another installment of It's My House, and today we have Delmar America. He's on Friday, every Friday, with Family Wealth, and let's see, in a minute we'll open up his mic and see what he has for today. I came up with a word, Amish Night. It's a combination of Amish and Mennonite. And it's I was talking to somebody, and I said, you know what, this person needs to think Amish and Mennonite. So I came up with one word, Amish Night. But we'll go over that, you know, one day on the meaning of that word. All right, so, okay, we got 1 minute left for Delmar America. Family Wealth. I'm going to talk about family capital, family wealth, and let's open up his mic. Good morning, Delmar.
Yes, and good morning to everyone. Thank you, L.A. Let me first explain some indigenous setting here. I'm in a unit where there are other people and species, Daisy the dog, and certain things may happen in the background that I have no control of. And what I've learned about our technology is that whatever you can hear, that technology picks it up and other people can hear it, sometimes even better than you, because you can kind of tune it out in your mind, but the technology part is actually sending straight through. So if that happens and it reaches a point with LA that it's not actually profitable that we continue, I'll leave it to you to judge to terminate that. But again, we are just excited to be here on this Friday, February the 3rd, Black History Month, a day that has never been. And again, I am Delmar America. And my website, and by the way, if my voice from time to time gets kind of off, I'm just coming from COVID and pneumonia and a few other things we're still challenged with. But we're going to fight on and do the best we can to get back to where we were. And some say we can't get back because COVID doesn't ever let you get back. But the opportunity we have this morning, we want to do an introduction overview of the subject of family capital. Giving credit to where it's due, this phrase came to me after listening to LA use the term social capital. Social capital. And most of us who have heard him cover this whole area of capital in different forms, we know what he means by that. And he talked more about family capital and another concept. And what I'm going to say doesn't contradict that. It's just, this is such a broad, broad concept. And it is just so sad that it's been around. It's nothing new. Now, the terminology may be new from the way we are using it, but the concept that LA talks about and what families have been doing for hundreds or even 1,000 years is just so common. And it's unfortunate that it has not been taught, because I say whatever's not taught is not caught. If it's not caught, people probably don't use it. But this is a new concept in expression or terminology, family capital. And we're going to be coming, hopefully, from time to time, just giving little bits at a time, hopefully layers upon layers. Repetitions keep adding up, and each time you hear it, you just understand it more. I could not spend an extended amount of time, and when I spend somewhere, say, yeah, we got the whole thing. It's much broader than that. So hopefully that you can, again, be aware of it, create interest, perhaps find some application in your own circle, in your own family, and sharing people on family capital, as I'm calling it. So we're talking about what it is, the why, the who, the where, and the when, but none of those be all covered at one time. Some key words would be the family, of course, a capital, expenditure, sowing and reaping, paycheck, passing paychecks. So what is family capital as I'm applying it in our program? And, of course, if you go to the dictionary, Webster Dictionary, you'll find a couple of, well, actually three different uses of it. We know the word capital refers to a city or some place. Capital in terms of how we write letters, capital letter. But the one that we are focused on is the capital as far as finance or value or capital stock or how much does a company, how much is a company worth. And so understanding that, we thought every family that has any kind of money coming in, this is our way of phrasing this, has family capital. In addition to, as LA has explained, capital can also be defined as resources that a family may own that they can actually exchange or turn it into money. So when we're talking about capital, we're talking about actual money. As he's talked about so clearly, how a family can have a recipe, and wow, there you go. Or they have a business, could have a business in their third generation. And so all that becomes capital to use in a certain way so as to create wealth for that family owns, and is generational, just passed on down to generation. And sadly, we have acknowledged that in the black community, we don't have as many generational wealth examples as some other cultures. But it's not too late. It's got too late. And with today's technology, with social media, we can perhaps speed up this introductory process and get more people involved in 2023 than ever before. I'm really excited about that. And hopefully in the months to come this year, we will have guests on LA who are actually applying what we are saying and telling their story and how it's benefiting them. So family capital, as I am using here in this program. Now, twofold about family capital. As I said, family capital be the actual cash flow into a household or a family or a number of families, plural. That's one part. That's something to have. And the second thought about family capital would be something that the family can do together, as you say about the recipe. Or imagine a family having a product, could be a chair or a dresser. Or as the, I think the Amish have, they make fireplaces. It could be something they manufacture. But again, something they could do together. So let me also introduce five things I believe are essential or could be very beneficial to this concept about the potential of family capital. There are five things I believe a family can do to really explode, or I think the word is exploit this opportunity. First of all, a family can build something. We're talking about building a house, whatever, build something. Number two, they could grow something. Number three, hopefully they will multiply whatever that is. Family should be growing and multiplying whatever that they're building or growing. Number four, they would fortify that. And we know from a construction standpoint, and I believe that those who are actually into building houses and have done it know that when you build a structure, frame, you have to fortify it. You have to put things in place so it will stand all the stuff going to come up against it. That's the fourth, fortify. And then number five, prayer, family praying together. And that's another part of our campaign also. So family capital. Let me give an example here that hopefully we can follow. Any given household, I'm going to use a round figure, that in order for that household to have the utilities, lights, water, and whatever other thing you need, the food, everything it needs for that family or household to have what they need from month to month, we'll call that cash coming in, family capital. And I'm going to use the example of $1,000, round off to $1,000. So it takes $1,000 for that family to have everything they need. But as they say, in most cases, the family spends $1,200, not $1,000, $1,200, which is $200 more. And you have a situation where you heard the phrase, round about the 27th of the month, there's too much month left, or there's not enough money left at the end of the money. The money's been spent, and now we're short. And so you have cash advance, all kind of things people do to make that difference. So even there, though, because that money's coming in each month and it's spent, and maybe the word expenditure tells us, you know, X means something going out. So the money that's spent, expenditures, that money doesn't come back. The utilities, the food, the other items, you have an automobile. You have to spend the money for that project or that item to operate. So all families have that. So the wisdom of capital, family capital, is take some of that money and sow it. Don't just spend it, but sow it. Again, I want to make clear what we mean by spending. The things that money is spent on, as necessary as they are, you said the utilities, the eating, the water, all things. But those dollars don't come back. Haven't heard of a company that sent a monthly check back saying thank you for the amount of money you spent for whatever. So those expenditures, outgoing money. But we show that the wisdom of creating family wealth is, and some say, well, take a percentage of that. You heard this phrase, pay yourself first. Now put your money in the bank. And, of course, right now, what I understand, the savings account for most people right now is like 0.001 or 2%. So that's not where it is. Of course, yeah, you got money there, but you will never get rich. Most people never get rich or wealthy putting money in the bank in a savings account. But if you took some of that money, a portion of that capital is coming in, and you sow it, not spend it. Let me explain by sow. We know we're talking about sowing something. We're not talking about stitching and cloth, but we're talking about sowing a seed. So you put the seed in the ground, and everything that God made from a seed standpoint has a cycle in which from the time it sprouts, it comes out of the ground and grows, and if you do what should be doing, protect it or whatever, it's going to come to harvest. And that harvest, whatever it produces, is going to come to some value. Interesting, I checked on apple trees, pear trees, pecan trees. Most of the standard trees that we see every day and hear and get a lot of our food from, most of those can be planted or seed planted or you set up. Within 5 to 7 years, you got a full production of that product. So just looking now, it's 2023. By the year 2030, which is less than, again, 5 years, more than 5 years ago, a person could start planting something like that and have an orchard of apple trees or pear trees or pecan trees, and just go on and on with what can happen, because once you sow that seed, and if you protect it and just don't allow anything to cancel it out, God and time will do the rest. And so it is, we all heard the analogy, just heard it recently, taking out $100 a month that you don't see, draw it out. After 20, 30, 40 years, you got millions of dollars. So the process of how things grow once you sow, nobody has to do that. Just a matter of sticking with the system and letting it happen. So what we will be showing and demonstrating in the months, again, to come, how to take a portion of that same money that you're spending, sowing it in a specific way, and because the company is already structured, it will start to pay you a check each month because you are, again, sowing money instead of just spending money on some of the same items you're already spending money for. But again, it's just a new structure, a new model of how you deal with your money. And so that's an overview concept, again, of what we mean about family capital. Every family has some kind of capital. Again, it could be the cash flow that's coming in one part, but it could be something owned or something they can do or produce. As LA talks about, the recipes or a business or a craft or a skill or whatever. That is what we're talking about, family capital. And again, we believe that this concept has been left out of most of our teaching, especially the church teaching. Most of the church model today, in my belief, teach poverty. Not because they say that's the way to go, but when you don't teach the opposite, that's the default. People are taught to be poor. And you get it in the hereafter. And that, again, is not the model that is in the book, but that's one most people have been exposed to. I've been aware of that. Been a part of myself for 50-plus years. So family capital concept ought to be one to make our ears ring. And how do we take the money we already have, not new money, and start a process by which we can transform, not exchange. And let me explain about that real minute. No, when you go to a exchange, go to a like, you know, like changes from red, green, and et cetera, that's a change. But when you transform something, it's no longer that same item. So taking money, when you plant a seed, that seed goes through a transformation. When it comes to harvest, it's not that seed again. And the thing that's so beautiful about it, almost every one of those items will reproduce that seed again and again and again. So that's the introduction to the concept. Hopefully in weeks to come, we'll get more specific on how it's been done, name some people who are doing it, some companies that are doing it. And hopefully, what I love about LA's whole concept of talk show, we're not about talking. We're actually talking about doing things. We want to build things. We want to show people that a difference can be made in this. So that's all I'm going to say on that, my time on that. But I'm available for a minute for any question you may have on anything I've said. So I turn back over to our host, LA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Delmar. And while on the topic of family wealth, family capital, I refer to 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7. And that was the widow lady that her husband passed on. Creditors came knocking on the door and said, look, your husband passed on. Sorry about that, but he owes us this debt. And if we can't work it out with you, then we're going to take your 2 sons as slaves, and they will work off your late husband's debt. So she says, well, wait a minute. Give me a little time to work this out. Let me get back to you. And so now let's take now she went to a financial advisor. That's what we call them in today's parlance, financial advisor, Elijah, who was, I guess, the E.F. Hutton of his day, financial advisor of his day. So she asked, you know, what can I do? So he said, well, you know, what do you have at home? Okay, so now I'm translating this the way I'm interpreting this. It's as close as I can in today's language. You know, in other words, what do you have of value at your home? She said, well, I don't have anything but a pot of oil. But when she went back, now let's look at the family wealth or the family capital that she had. Number one, she was in good health. Now, we as human beings are human capital. the whole slave trade, and I mean, because everybody culturally has been enslaved sometime, you know, the Vikings enslaved people. People in Western Europe enslaved people. The Chinese enslaved people. Japanese enslaved people. And then you have the Africans, you know, translating slave trade. So all slavery is about is acquiring cheap labor, human capital. So she was in good health, and her sons were in good health. So she had, to start off with, she had three human beings, three people that, you know, that's human capital. She had that little pot of oil. That's number two. They had their own house, okay, where they live. That's three, all right? The house had rooms, which they later used. And the house was in a community. They had social capital among their neighbors. So we just named about 5 to 6 forms of family capital that they had. You know, but, you know, all she looked at first was, well, you know, I just had that. Now, what she did was she instructed her sons. Now, this was their recipe. Told her sons, go out, knocking on neighbors' doors, and borrow as many empty vessels as you can, bring them back to the house. And so we don't know how many neighbors that said yes to that, but those two sons went out and bought those empty vessels back to the house, and she filled them up with oil until there were no more empty vessels left. So then she went back to Elijah, the E.F. Hutton of his day, and what do I do now? He said, go sell the oil and pay off the debt and live off the rest. So that they took their family capital, which was the mother and two sons, and they started a family business. Okay, it was local, and they borrowed the vessels, and I guess they sold back that oil, which was cooking, which can be used to be cooking. You can use the heat of bath water. You can use the heat of water to cook with, what have you. But they sold it to their neighbors, they were able to pay off the debt that her husband left behind, and they live off the rest. So that's 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7 is an illustration, in my opinion, of, in a demonstration of family capital. Family capital and family wealth. So if you're facing a financial situation right now, then the first place you need to look is in the mirror. What do you have on hand? Number one, you got yourself, because you are human capital. You can work. Okay, do you have any other family members that can help you, or even friends that can help you? All right. Do you have any neighbors that can help you? See, these are the basic elements that, you know, this they were able to pay off this debt, which seems impossible to pay, I imagine. And as we've played on here before, Francois Mignon, black woman out of New Orleans, she go to her website. The name of her business is the Cupcake Collection. All right. She took her grandmother's recipe for making cupcakes, along with $5 and the help of two of her daughters. She's got 7 kids, 2 of her children. And they took that $5 and turned it into $60 on one day. And they took that $60 and turned it into $600 within a week. Long story short, they were able to repeat that same process of, well, now think about it, grandma's cupcake recipe and $5. The lights were off. The water was shut off. And they were facing foreclosure. Seven kids and two adults. Nine people. If Child Protective Services got wind of it, they could have came up and snatched up the kids, but that didn't happen. So she's taking that $5 in Grandma's Recipe, which is intellectual property. That's intellectual capital. And turned it so far in over 10 million. You can go to her website. The Cupcake Collection, location, and there's pictures of the location in New Orleans. That picture that you see, the Cupcake Collection, that's the house. See, the oil for Mignon was Grandma's Cupcake Recipe. That was the oil. That was the oil. But then, you know, and they just kept on filling up.
I hadn't tried on the talk show.
It's over 10 million. You know, over 10, they've done over $10 million. They've done over $10 million in sales. So, like I say, go to our website, the Cupcake Collection. They have a location in New Orleans, Louisiana, and a location in Nashville, Tennessee. She's got several videos on YouTube. And, hey, you can even reach out to Mignon herself. She's on Instagram. She's got an assistant that if you want to, I guess, get an interview, and we're going to try to get her, not try to, we're going to get her on here to interview her. But, you don't have to wait for us to come on, for her to come on here. You can reach out to herself, but she's got plenty of videos on YouTube. And I would say her story is a living embodiment. Think about it. She took $5 in Grandma's Cupcake Recipe. You have people that have gone to Harvard and Yale. They haven't done as well as she has done financially. You've had people that went, that graduated from Wharton Business School. Their wealth hasn't touched nowhere near her wealth. Just with Grandma's recipe. How many of you have recipes out there? Bread pudding. They have to be food. But the thing is, at the core, Mignon made something and sold it. Now, in 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7, they formed a company, and they really didn't make anything. They just, packaged the oil, you know, in the containers, and then sold, you know, home delivery. Matter of fact, you can say that 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7, was the ancient forerunner to the apps that we have on our phone today. Now you can go on your phone. If you have the app, if you have Instacart, I mean, I've used Instacart several times myself just to order groceries. You know, you go on, you click on an app on your phone, Instacart, and, you know, you look at what are they, you know, milk, cereal, ground beef, eggs, whatever you want. And then, you know, pay for it on your phone. The Instacart shopper will shop it, make any substitutions if necessary, and then bring it to your front door. So what they did was they essentially made home delivery of, you know, the oil. You know? Today you got Instacart, you got DoorDash, you got Uber Eats, you got Grubhub, and you got other apps that they will bring it to your door. So home delivery is nothing new. This is an ancient technique that has worked for thousands of years. Only difference is today, we have smartphones with apps. 1,000 years from now, 5,000 years from now, I'm sure it'll still be fundamentally, you know, bring the convenience of bringing it to your doorstep. So, you know, thank you, Delmar, for what you brought to the table today. And I recommend, you know, go read 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7. And then I'm going to add one more on. And I call it the five stone strategies. I mentioned this yesterday. It deals with David and Goliath. When you're in a situation when you're a David and you're facing Goliath, and there might be a very large looming debt, or what you might look at an impossible or nearly impossible situation to get through, get calm, get quiet, and do like David. David had five stones. I'm looking at those five stones as five strategies. Now, he only used one that took down Goliath. But the lady and her two sons, okay, their strategy was, okay, let's gather up this oil. I mean, gather up the vessels and pour the oil in. And they use one strategy. So think about other ways that they might have, you know, used that, but as other strategies, but they use one strategy. Now, they could have had five, you know, plan A, or plan A doesn't work, we'll go to plan B. And we, you know what, we don't know, well, now, the part the scripture is written, you know, that was their first go-to strategy, but you know, we don't know if she sat down with us and said, all right, well, let's write down about three to five strategies. But we know that particular strategy worked. All right, so let's not get overkill with it. Let's see. Delmar, would you like to add anything on to that?
Yes, I would suggest anyone like a follow-up on the concept. My website is delmaramerica.us, and America is spelled with two A's, Delmar, AAMERICA.us, and you'll find a number of podcasts on demand. I believe the third one down from what comes up is on Family Capital. That's about 30 minutes. I get into some concept that I didn't cover this morning. But again, just to follow up on the thought and the idea, you can go there, DelmarAmerica.us, and we believe you can find some supporting material. And again, Ella, you mentioned the concept. It's right there in our hands. We all have it. It's right here. That's where you got to go to China or somewhere to get it. It's right here, as you say, the home delivery, all of these concepts. As the Bible said, nothing is new. Things are being recycled in different colors and styles, and technology has pretty much magnified all of that. But the key to wealth, family wealth, is right in front of our faces. Right, we have it right here. Only thing we got to do is make application. But again, thank you again for the opportunity, and look forward to sharing some more on next Friday, Lord willing. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Hold on, though. All right, area code 309, your mic is open.
Good morning. Good morning, Delmar. Good morning, L.A.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, it's most definitely Friday, and checking out things. We got, you know, Reba's event is today, tonight. But, yeah, I just want to come on and be part of what you guys got going on here today.
Okay, yeah, I haven't talked to Reem in a while, but that's what that one idea, which is we'll pull it together some kind of way. Maybe not, because I don't know what you have planned for tonight. But I mean, as far as the building project goes, but that is one idea coupled with what you were talking about, Chris, is essentially repeating that idea in 50 different markets. So I'm looking forward to that.
Definitely.
Oh, and have you come up with a clubhouse room yet? I mean, time for that?
No, I have not done that. I wound up the hotel that I've been working on. They had a maintenance guy that was working for them, and they kind of got into it with him, but they had him doing some electrical work, changing out lights and things like that in this hotel. And he called the city, and now they're putting no occupancy on the hotel. So all the homeless and everybody that we've been helping, everybody is being kicked out into the cold, and it's the coldest day of the year so far here in Illinois.
Wow.
They came in yesterday and put a no occupancy on the hotel. So that's kind of the things I've been dealing with since yesterday.
About how many people you think are going to be kicked out?
Somewhere in the ballpark of 25.
Well, that's a community. If those people can just come together with one idea where they can band together. I mean, the numbers are there. I'm sure the skill set's in there. They just need to come up with, you know what, let's form our own, you know, let's get our own patch of land and form our own little village. And then help each other build homes.
You know, that'd be nice. I've got 2.5 acres right here in Bloomington that would build enough of the, you know, it would build a tiny village that would house every homeless person in this community. But this city don't care about people.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I had the police had called me from a guy that had gotten an accident. He had his dog in the van. He couldn't get the vehicle towed until the next day. Well, they called me the next morning, and they're telling me that they got animal control down there, and they're going to take this dog out of the vehicle. And they asked me if I would come and get it. So I went and got the dog yesterday. But they were more worried about the animal than they are humans. And I had the discussion with the police, and and the ones that were there, you know, they went like shut their lips when they realized that instead of being a problem, they need to start solving the problems. And yeah, I saw it in them, but when I turned around and said that what Bloomington City had done to me for trying to help some homeless, they gave me the excuse that they don't keep up with Bloomington's news. Now, this was normal. Police officers saying this. Now, Bloomington news is normal's news. So when you hear police officers say that they don't pay no attention to what is going on, that made me sad. I looked at him. I said, you guys have a job to do, but it doesn't make you superior over anyone else. Did not know how to take me other than take it. What I liked is the first thing they said to me was, you know, we do have our body cameras on. So I started talking to their body cameras. And, you know, it was funny to watch them hem up. I was wanting to go get the discovery on their body cameras yesterday and just use the footage and let people hear what someone says about someone else, because they were, like I said, it's against the law to have your animal outside in the winter, but it's okay to have your mother, brother, sister, aunt, uncle out there. This makes no sense. And this is what I'm dealing with. Right now I'm dealing with it today. They're saying everybody had to be completely out of this building by 12 o'clock today. Now, the tools I have inside this building, I could not collect them and get them out of this building by 12 o'clock, let alone anything else. So I'm dealing with a bunch of things, but it's coming down to this city's causing more of a problem over someone, you know, upset that they lost their job. So, you know, people cause problems in any way they can, and they really don't think about the consequences behind it. Because as this happens, I happen to have a vehicle that was there on the property that I was letting someone use to go out and sit in and smoke their cigarettes and stuff. But the tires had went flat. They asked me to come air them up. I said, I will, but the vehicle can't move. I've got to go transfer the title over to this other guy and get the plates done because this guy's buying it. They turned around and took off and tried to go air the tires up last night. And I found my vehicle up at the gas station with the tires off the rims because they drove it up there with three flat tires. And so here I am today, having to go and take the tires off the rims, take them and go get them put back on the rims, and then go back and put the vehicle or get the wheels on the vehicle, but then go get tags and stuff and put on the vehicle so that it can legally go down the road. Right now it's sitting in a gas station parking lot. Luckily I know the workers that are in there, and they told me that it was fine. It wasn't, nothing would happen to it. They let it sit there till I could get it figured out. But, you know, it's an ongoing rolling thing. When stuff starts going, you know, you never know what's going to be dealt to you. And, you know, one of the guys that was homeless that I was helping, you know, went into a deep spiral spin thinking his world is over because he's about to be back out on that concrete, beating the pavement, trying to survive. And I told him, I said, everything will work out. We can't allow them to do something to a human being that's not ethical. And throwing somebody out in the cold when it's 14 degrees outside and it's not getting any warmer is not an answer to nothing. But I'm waiting on the city to call me back because I want their answer of where they're taking these people that are in this hotel. You're not,
Chris, how,
these people back to the street.
This is in Bloomington, Bloomington, Illinois, you said?
Yep. It's in Normal, Illinois, where this one's happening now. But Bloomington, Normal are connected.
Okay. You know what the population of either one of those cities is, Bloomington or Normal?
Yeah, it's roughly about 100 to 140,000 between the two of them.
Okay. Now, as people have heard me announce on this show before, in the United States, because we're looking at the chessboard here, in the United States, there are 19,500 communities that have a municipal charter or municipal corporation. Now, you said it's about 100,000, you say?
Yeah, it's at least 100,000.
Okay, I'm looking. I have a list in front of me of the 1,000 largest cities in the United States. So hold on, let's see if I can track them down. Let's see. Let's go up the ladder a little bit here. Okay. Well, let me find something in Illinois. Okay, Michigan, Texas, Ohio, Mesquite. All right, let me go. I'm just keep on scrolling down. Sterling Heights, Michigan, Miramar, Florida, Waco, Texas. Okay, Peoria, Illinois. That has that now. Peoria, Illinois. I've been there a few times. That is the 237th largest city in the United States, which has over 116,000 people. Let's keep on this. Now I'm these ones out of the once again the United States has 19,500 municipal corporate communities. Towns that have municipal corporations. In my opinion, if you can at all costs avoid the 1,000, the cities that in the top 1,000 out of that 19,005. Hold on, let me see if I can find. Elgin, Illinois, has 110,000. Davenport, Iowa's got 102,000. Flint, Michigan's got 99,000. Compton, California's got 97,000. Roswell, Georgia, 94,000. Lee Summit, Missouri, 93,000. Bloomington, Minnesota has 86,000. Duluth, Minnesota, 86,000. Cicero, Illinois has 84,000. Well, I must miss Bloomington somewhere. All right, let me see.
Now, when you mentioned Peoria, Peoria is the city that I'm a member of the Continuum of Care on. And this past September,
oh, I found Bloomington.
2022. Oh, you found it? Okay.
I
was going to say Peoria is the one
Bloomington, Illinois. Okay, Bloomington, Illinois is the 17th largest city in the United States. Once again, there are over 19,500 of them now. This doesn't include unincorporated cities, but out of the ones that are incorporated, Bloomington, Illinois is the 417th largest city in the United States, and they have here 78,902 people. All right. Now, of course, Normal's on here, too, but I had to find that. Right. So now I'm going to skip all the way down to it's 1,000 here, so I got it right. Panama City, Florida has a little bit over 36,000. That is the 1,000th. It's out of 19,500. It is the 1,005th largest city in the United States with a little bit over 36,000. Let's see, Illinois. All right, Calumet City, Illinois. Is the 994th largest city in the United States with a little bit over 37,000 people. Now, I'm putting that out there because now this is just me personally. I say out of 19,500, look at the towns that are in the top, the lowest 20%. And that's where you'll find, in my opinion, the most freedom to do what you want to do in these smaller towns. Matter of fact, let's look at smallest towns in Illinois. And let's see, Illinois. My population, obviously, okay. Let's see, Illinois is very small towns and villages, fewer than 1,000 residents, all right. And you can look this up online. Now, Illinois, the state of Illinois is having towns and villages that have 1,000 residents or less. And there are quite a few of them. There are, and this is where, these are places where I call the real United States of America. Because you can basically build what you want to build, live the way you want to live, and be really left alone by dramatically less government as opposed to larger towns. So you got Adair, Illinois, 210 people. Addyville, Illinois, 243 people. Albany, Illinois, 883 people. And they got a bunch of A's, they got a bunch of B towns. Baldwin, Illinois, 353 people. Batchtown, Illinois, 208 people. Bath, Illinois, 310 people. Bluffs, Illinois, 609 people. Let's see, let's keep on scrolling down. Illinois has a bunch of towns that have 1,000 or less people. But that slide, I mean, Saddell, Illinois, 597 people. St. John's, Illinois, 211 people. They got any towns in Illinois like 100 people? Wagner, Illinois, 259 people. Vermilion, Illinois, 217 people.
How many is in Towanda?
But some people, manifest Stanton, Illinois, 211 people. There are a lot of people, Spillertown, Illinois, 202 people. A lot of people, I would probably say most people, like to live in the larger towns because they're looking for the comfort and convenience. You know, the town might have a subway, L train, bus system, you know, a Walmart nearby. Not to say that some of these smaller towns don't. But anyway, from my personal observations, it's the smaller town. So I say if you want to find a sense of freedom, real American freedom, go looking at the towns that have populations of 1,000 people or less. And a lot of those towns could be ex-suburban towns, not suburban, but ex-suburban and rural locations. Ex-burbs are beyond the suburbs, but striking distance of the city. And there are quite a few rural areas that are striking distance. I've been in towns in Oklahoma that, you know, about 35, 45 minutes away from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And all in between there, you know, you have towns that are smaller in size, but, you know, you get everything you want at a larger town and like work or church or whatever you want, but then have a safer haven where, you know, you're living in a smaller community. So every state, matter of fact, let me look in smallest towns in, let's look at North Carolina. North Carolina. Okay. With North Carolina, I'll go with North Carolina's 10 smallest towns. And they are. And see, these are places that I call the real United States of America. And when I say real United States of America, you can basically build what you want to build. you have dramatically less government intervention in your life. A lot of times, not in all cases, but in many cases, taxes are lower to live in these towns as well, property taxes. So, so in North Carolina, and I'm counting them from 10, the 10th smallest city in the United States, in North Carolina, to the smallest city in North Carolina, you have Orem, O-R-R-U-M, Orem, North Carolina, is in Robeson County, population 59. 59 people. We can do a podcast and put together our own town. Okay. Seven Springs, North Carolina, which is located in Wayne County, North Carolina, population 50 people, the United States of America. Eighth smallest town in North Carolina, Rex, R-E-X, Rex, North Carolina, located in Robeson County, also population 50. Hassell, H-A-S-S-E-L-L, Hassell, North Carolina, located in Martin County, has a population of 49 people. Falkland, North Carolina, is the sixth smallest town in the state of North Carolina. It's located in Pitt County, population 47 people. See, when you get down in those realms, people, you don't need a police force. Everybody knows everybody, and your neighbors are your de facto security and law enforcement. Fifth smallest town in North Carolina is Lake Santitla, that's S-A-N-T-E-E-L-A-H. That's located in Graham County, population 38 people. Leggett, North Carolina, is the fourth smallest city in North Carolina. That's located in Edgecombe County, population 37 people. Third smallest city in North Carolina, this is part of what I call the real United. See, man, forget about going to New York or Durham or Raleigh or Charlotte, unless you want to visit, hang out, and do something like that. But to have peace of mind and have you a debt-free house, go to these little small places. But in North Carolina, I might be butchering this name, D-U-D-A-R-R-A-C-H, Duracha, Iraq, North Carolina. That's in Hoke, H-O-K-E, County, North Carolina, population 34. Incorporated in North Carolina, population 13 people. There are towns all over this country that have a population of 13 people. All over the United States. The smallest city or town in the state of North Carolina is Bellevue. E-L-L-V-I-E-W, population 6, that's located in Gaston County. Now, let's go to a trending topic here. We're going to go to the state of Tennessee. I want to bring up a point here. Smallest towns in Tennessee. Now, I'm tying this in to a trending topic of Tyree Nichols, that's in the news. His funeral was, his homegoing was yesterday. But I want to bring up a point and tie him into some other people and what I call a real United States of America. Now, Memphis, Tennessee, according to L.A., it's located legally in the United States of America, but it's not part of the de facto part of the real United States of America. I'm trying to get the population here. Let's see. I hate the way these internet searches go sometimes. I don't want somebody's opinion on a 10 small or a, let me do it this way. A least populated towns in Tennessee. Okay, let's look at it that way. With a population of just 81 people, Salisbury, Tennessee, Salisbury, Salisbury, Tennessee, which is in Hardeman County, is the smallest town in the Volunteer State. So, okay, well, let's just go with this. Oh, man, I hate the way. All right, let's go with this because. Okay, so what's this town? Smallest town with the lead? No, all right, hold it, wait a minute. Okay, Salisbury. All right, Salisbury. And let me look it up another way, all right. Salisbury, a town in Tennessee, okay. Okay, Salisbury, once again spelled S-A-U-L-S-B-U-R-Y, Tennessee. Salisbury is a town in rural Hardeman County in Tennessee, located on State Highway 57, in southwest Hardeman County, has a population of 99 at the 2000 census and 81 at the 2010 census, showing a decrease of 18 people. Salisbury is the least populated incorporated municipality in Tennessee. Okay. Now, let's tie this into these small towns and why I call them the real United States of America. Tyree Nichols, Memphis, if it's not the largest city in North Carolina, it's in the top two or three or four or five or whatever, in Memphis, Tennessee. It's in within the top 1,000 largest cities in the United States. Once again, we're talking about 19,500 municipalities. If you look at Tyree Nichols, George Floyd, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, if you look at every high-profile incident of somebody getting killed or meeting their demise some kind of way, it could be law enforcement or non-law enforcement. If you look at every one of those cases, they're in the common denominator. See, get the race out of it. Now, this is L.A. speaking. Get the race out of it. It's cabin fever. You're living in 600,000 people don't need to be living in a community. 1 million people don't need to be living in a community. Chicago, 3 million people we're not built that way. Once again, this is just LA's editorial on this. You don't never hear anything. All these little towns that I've just named, they don't hit the news. Now, if something horrific, now you know how this country is with news and everything. If something hit one of these places, you'll hear about it. As with, you know, Columbine. But Columbine isn't really a small place at all. I'm just saying, if you want to live in, if you want to go to the real United States of America, you need to look at these little small places on the map. And then there are places that you discover that, now, I've been naming all incorporated cities, even though they're small. Some have 13 people, some have 81 people that they're incorporated. There are also a lot of community, and that's 19,500 of them. I'm saying stay away from the top ones. Actually, I'm saying stay away from, concentrate on the bottom 20%. Anyway, that's just my commentary on that. Okay, let me find my way back to the studio. Oh, hold on, wait a minute. Oh, here we go, Blog Talk. So, anyway, that's my commentary on safer places, or places where you have dramatically more freedom to live. And a lot of these places that I just named, these little tiny places, they have no police force. They don't need it. You know, when you got 12 people in town, you got 81 people in town, you know, your de facto police force are your neighbors. In a lot of these places, you know, some of you do know that I have frequented Taft, Oklahoma. Hey, man, I slept with the front door open all night. Unlocked. Okay. So, then one night, because it was, you know, the house had been closed up for a whole lot of time, so it was stuffy and kind of moldy. So one night, you know, I had to go sleep. I propped, got a chair, put it on the front porch, and I slept out there. The street, the road's right there. You know, maybe one person walked by that night at his regular time, and I mean, nobody barbed me. Now, I can't do that in Miami or Orlando or some, you know, Chicago, someplace like that. So, in any event, all right, going back to, like I said, every Friday we have Delmar on for family wealth, family capital, and he really breaks it down. All right, any announcements before we leave for today? If so, if you put up your hand, press number one. If you got any, Chris, you got any announcements to make? Okay, Chris might have stepped away. Delmar, any announcements to make? Okay, I think he might have stepped away. All right, but now, you know what? One thing I have noticed, there is a trend of people that are moving away off the grid. And the grid of these cities that, you know, out of the top 1,000 largest cities in the United States, that all those are on the grid. Okay. And, you can probably add on another 2,000 on to that out of 19,500. But you do have people that are moving off the grid. So we'll report on that and then bring some of those people on. Where you can, well, you know, everybody's got different missions and all this. Okay, wait a minute. Okay. All right, so anybody got any special announcements? Okay, go check out Delmar's, Delmar America on, Delmar, are you there? All right, on Blog Talk. or go to his website, and he's got a you check out his matter of fact, you know what, before we go, we'll play a little bit of Mignon and then we'll close it out.
Hello, everyone. In case you missed our very first event with Lady Lunch Club here in Nashville, we are at the beautiful Omni Hotel at the Kitchen Notes Restaurant, and I'm here with our featured guest, Mignon Francois, who is the founder and CEO of the Cupcake Collection here in Nashville. Mignon is so inspirational, and we are so excited to have her here. I wanted to just ask her a few questions so that we could share a little bit of her spirit here with you in this video in case you missed it, or in case you were here and you just couldn't get enough of it. So I'm just going to ask her a few questions now, and you guys stay tuned and make sure you check us out on our website, ladylunchclub.com, and across the social media platforms, we'll be at Lady Lunch Club. So, Mignon, it is such a pleasure to have you
here. Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful gift.
You are so successful in baking and being a small business owner, but I think there is so much about your spirit, like above and beyond that, that I think the world needs to see.
Aww.
So if you could just share a little bit with us about, you know, in your own eyes, how you see yourself and who you strive to be and kind of what you do to get yourself there.
Okay, so I see myself as famous.
I love it. You are famous. You are.
You know, a lot of people won't be honest with you and just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not intended for it to sound arrogant. It just is what it is.
I love it.
I always knew that I was going to be famous.
Okay.
From a little girl, I would tell my mother that I'm going to be famous one day. And she'd be like, what are you going to be famous for? And I'd say, I don't know. And she said, well, then be famous. And so there was just always something on the inside of me that said that people were supposed to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if with this fabulous name, I had to put some due diligence behind it to make it great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed to wake up every day on purpose to do something good. Now, I didn't get to that until I was 33 years old because I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I was good enough. I thought my nose was too big, my lips were too big. I wasn't smart enough. What if I don't say the right thing? What if they don't like me? And so it took for me to, my best friend took some pictures of me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my former life,
I was a photographer.
Ooh.
And so she was saying, you always make people feel beautiful. I want to do the same thing for you.
I love
it. So I'm going to put makeup on your face.
Hey, that's a friend for you, right?
I'm going to put makeup on your face, and you just show me where to point that camera and click
mm-hmm.
it. And I didn't think she'd be able to do that. You know, this was before filters.
Okay.
Before iPhone.
Hashtag no filter.
And she took a picture of me, and the pictures came back untouched, and I was like, wow, that girl is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit with myself and find out that was me.
Wow.
And I just kept saying, that is me.
Yeah.
That is no one else. That is me. And it was in that time that I began to know the meaning of my name. My name means beautiful.
Wow.
And this is what I've learned over time, that you need to know the meaning of your name, because either you will live out the meaning of your name
mm-hmm.
or you will live out the purpose of the adversary set up against it.
Wow.
And so I always thought it was ugly, but my name said that I was beautiful.
Right.
And when I saw myself as pretty for the first time, I began to walk in rooms and own them. And I didn't do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It just was, I was pretty enough to walk in the room.
It was
right?
The change in the attitude. And,
right,
yeah.
That I could walk, I could set them straight, I could gather myself
uh-huh.
around my clothes, right?
Yeah.
You know, get my attitude.
Yeah.
I have a be attitude.
Yeah.
And when you think about what be attitudes are,
mm-hmm.
I was still meek. I was still humble. And I'm going to always be those things. And even though I'm saying this right now, I'm saying it for the benefit of someone else who doesn't know that about themselves,
mm-hmm.
who needs to know that you're all that.
Right.
It doesn't matter what somebody else has to say about you. And it was in that time that I learned the meaning of my name, and then I began to live out the purpose set up for me. And that's why I could do anything.
Wow.
Because I believed it then.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, when you believe it about yourself, other people will tack on and believe it too.
Exactly.
People will believe whatever they see you doing.
Exactly.
You know, it's just kind of like, you know how they say the rich get richer and the poor get poorer?
Right.
It is, not only is it true, it's a biblical concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biblical truth. And that which you have, when you use it for whatever little it is that you have, it becomes more.
Right.
Because the currency that's performing for you is the faith that you're putting into
it. Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of people look at that scripture, you know, and think of it in terms of just money. But I think it, you know, expands to all aspects of our lives. Like, you know, that what you have and that you're grateful for and that you, basically what you're working with, if you're actually using it, you know, they say you use it or you lose it.
Yeah.
If you're actually using it, then it grows and it expands for you. And, you know, it does also work in the negative sense as well. It's just like what you focus on will expand and multiply. And so I think that's a really interesting point, you know, to bring up on how, you know, whatever it is that you're focusing on, that you're grateful for, that, you know, that you feel like you have, is going to expand and grow for you.
That's a really powerful point that you said. You get more what you focus on, whether that be negative or positive.
Exactly.
I had a situation in my team where this really great little girl, captain of the cheerleading squad in high school, she's going to cheer here at Tennessee State University. Gigantic dimples that take up her whole entire face.
Uh-huh.
A smile that looked like I created it on her.
It.
But she had attitude problems.
Mm-hmm.
And people were writing me saying, that little girl right there, she does not represent you. And I was going to have to let her go.
Yeah.
And I sat her down and said, look, I love you, but I will love you from across, from across the town.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't represent who I am. And so we focused on the negativity of what she was bringing to the table. Girl, there's one more person right there about because I'm so committed to training and raising them in the way that they should go, not just my village.
Yeah,
right? I wanted to give her another opportunity. She had like five opportunities. Like, girl, look, you just don't want to get this year.
I am so trying.
Everybody can't sing back up for Beyonce.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
I want the best singing backup for me too.
Exactly.
I'm taking my cues from
the
Queen Bee, right?
I love it. You can never get too much Queen Bee.
Right. And so as I was thinking about, I was getting more negativity. We were focused on what she wasn't doing, and I decided one day to wake up and focus on the positive in her. Like, girl, you are too pretty for that.
Yeah.
Or, girl, those symbols like that, the world needs to see them. When I focused on that for her, it turned around that day.
Yeah,
that day. And so she still, the other day she had a talk with the manager. She was like, I just don't understand why people don't get it. And I'm like, really, girl?
She's like, oh, how quickly we forget. That's awesome. Okay, so we know a little bit about you. We can see, you know, I feel like it's purity in the spirit. I love it. I connected with you just right from the start. So what is next for you? What, you know, exciting things do you have coming up? Where do you see yourself going? Like, what can we anticipate?
Oh, I want to be doing more of telling people what they can do if they believe. I have a really packed schedule in 2018 that's going to take me traveling into the world to spread this joy. I am on a journey to joy.
Yes.
And I have this mission in my life that people who come in contact with Mignon Francois need to leave feeling joy. And if they don't do that, then I have failed at my mission.
Mm-hmm.
But my word for the year is joy and finding joy in the journey, because you can't have a journey without joy.
Yes.
And so it's like we focus on what the first thing we do after we've completed a task is, what did I do wrong so I can next time not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of focusing on what did I do well or what brought me joy. And I'm looking for helping people to find joy. I told you earlier, I want to play hide and seek with joy because ain't nobody find her.
Everybody's desperately seeking her,
but nobody can't find her. And I want to be up on purpose about finding joy in 2018. But we just got picked up by the Home Shopping Network.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was so excited. I was watching the video like, yes.
That is a dream come true. Someone asked me if I ever thought that that was going to happen to me, and I said, yes.
Did you? I love it. I love it. You're like, yeah, I absolutely thought it would.
I didn't know that, you know?
Right.
But like I told you before, like I knew big things were happening.
Yeah.
I just had to prepare myself. There is a great thought, a thinker of our time that said that a man's opportunity is only as good as what he prepares himself to receive it.
I love it.
And I just always see success as a crash, a really bad crash,
mm-hmm.
at an intersection where there are no survivors
mm-hmm.
except for success.
Mm-hmm.
It's where preparation and opportunity collide.
Yes.
And the only thing rising out of the ashes is success.
Oh, I love
it. And that's really what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2018, I'm doing more of that. I'm going to be a part of the American Dream program that just started on the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
And they said that they believe that I'm one of their next big discoveries.
Yes.
And that was just like,
that is so amazing.
So exciting. And then, you know, just more of nurturing and developing talent
mm-hmm.
For people to be, who are going to come into my footsteps. To whom a lot is given, a lot is required.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my daughter last night, and I was saying, you know, it's hard to be in this place where you just would rather just go find the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find a diamond and polish that up.
Uh-huh.
But diamonds don't look like diamonds. Many people pass them by.
Right.
And I'm looking for diamonds in the rough to polish up because I want, you know, when I meet my creator, I want him to say, what did you create, Mignon?
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel? What did you do? And I want him to be pleased.
Yes.
So in 2018, I'm doing more of that. But what I'm most excited about is in 2017, we got voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
I believe it. In America, in the world.
So our sweet potato cupcake represents.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah. And so I've opened up a new store in New Orleans.
Awesome.
And I'm going to be opening, you know, more opportunities for people to have franchise opportunities.
Okay.
I'm going to limit it, but yeah. I am going to do a few. So that's some of my plans.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, now if you had to give some advice to somebody out there who's looking at this, who's watching this, and who said, you know, can I do this?
Oh, the thing I would say to them is don't try to be like me. You are the best you that there ever will be. And I want you to spend time being more of that. If I could tell people anything that you're looking for, you have it.
Yes.
It's already on the inside of you. I couldn't bake out of a box. And now I'm an award-winning,
wow.
accomplished pastry chef. They're asking
wow.
me to create products on
wow.
shelves, and people are standing in lines to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I'm like,
like, is it real?
They want to know what I have to say. They want to
wow.
they want to taste what I've done, and now it's in a place where there's almost nothing I can't taste. You know, nothing I can't make, but I know it's not me.
Yeah.
It's who I allow to work in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're arrogant beings that believe that we come up with anything. But these ideas are strong
yes.
on the inside of
yes.
us. I heard I do a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my reading is done in the car. So I listen to
uh-huh.
a lot of books,
mm-hmm.
You know, on CD. And I heard a philosopher say that the average American gets 4 good ideas a year. That
wow.
if they would focus on one of those,
wow.
they would be a millionaire.
Wow. That's an awesome,
right?
Yeah.
One good
wow.
God idea.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all you need. Oh, I love it. So there you have it. Just a little bit of Mignon right here in this little segment for you. But, you know, there's so much more, and I wish we had more time to, you know, to put more content here on this video. But make sure you continue to keep up with her, follow her, because greatness is following her. So make sure you keep up. And we look forward to seeing you guys and meeting your beautiful faces in the future. Bye.